RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Well, it is football season, and this is the LandryFootball.com podcast. So happy to be with you every Tuesday and Thursday right here on LandryFootball.com. A reminder that in addition to catching us right here at LandryFootball.com, you can catch us on Radio Influence, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and Google Play. So much to talk about. We're going to get into the importance of preseason in the NFL. I'm not going to sell you on the importance of winning and losing the games, but we'll get into why it is so necessary and even more necessary than in the old days of getting ready and how the dynamics have really changed. So we're going to get into that. Take a look at who's looked good thus far in preseason. We're only through week one, but we're going to take you through the way. And, of course, at LandryFootball.com, we break down all the games, so we have that for you. Each and every game broken down. Who looked good on film, but we're going to get into some of that. Look at the AFC a little bit today and how the divisions may shape up and who are the playoff caliber teams, and we'll do the NFC on Thursday. Then we're going to take a look inside the Zeke Elliott and Colin Kaepernick situations. Those have been probably the two most polarizing topics of the past several weeks, and in the case of Colin Kaepernick, all the offseason. We're going to give you some what people inside the league have been saying in doing my football work. Dealing with the football people is a little different than dealing just with some of the non-football people that are involved in some of the other ancillary decisions. But we're going to really explain to you why in totality he doesn't have a job. It's not as simple as you think, but it certainly has a lot to do with some of the things you have heard about. We'll try to clear that up a little bit. Then I'll take you into my offseason and Nick Saban's offseason and how some of our paths have crossed there and a little bit of what Nick Saban has done since losing that very close national championship game to Clemson and how it has caused him to refocus. Yes, college football fans, Alabama is refocused. And are maybe making some changes. And how those changes began to take place at the end of last year, the whole Lane Kiffin controversy, you'll get in some we'll get into some of the insights as to how that took place and how it's maybe changed his approach a little bit as he's a constantly evolving type of football coach. We'll look at the national playoff caliber teams and some latest in the college football fall practices. I know it's funny to call it fall practices. We're not in fall yet, but pre-season practices in college football as folks, yes, we're just a week away. Saturday, August 26th, we have got college football games on Saturday. We've got a few, not a lot. We've got Rice and Stanford and Sydney and Oregon State, Colorado State, and Portland State, BYU. A handful of games. And then, of course, the big weekend starts the next weekend, the next Thursday, the 31st, into the big Labor Day, big weekend extravaganza in which college football takes center stage. And college football always takes center stage here, along with the NFL at LandryFootball.com. So we're going to get into all of that here. Going to start again with the preseason. What does it mean? Why should you watch it? I'm not going to sell you on watching it. First of all, I think people tend to look at preseason as, hey, football's back. I just want to see football. I just want to see guys throw and catch and tackle. But it's not real exciting for some. You hear this, why do I want to watch a bunch of players that are not going to be on the team? Well, folks, it requires, and from a perspective of a scout and as a coach, it requires a process in which to evaluate these players and to make a determination of who will make your team and who won't. Yes, a lot of the guys that you're watching will not make your favorite team, but some of them will. And making the right decisions are critical. Rosters in the NFL are built from the bottom up, not the top down. The reason why the good teams are good is because they have the best depth. Injuries will take place, will always take place in the NFL to some degree. You have a 53-man roster, practice squad. How effective you are in November, past Thanksgiving on, will determine how good you can be and whether you can be a contender, a legitimate deep playoff contender, just a playoff contender or less. That will be determined by the depth of your roster because you're going to have injuries. Now, if you're completely depleted by injuries like the Vikings were at the offensive line, some other teams, yeah, it's hard to overcome that when you have the rash of injuries at one spot. But depth is king, and it's avoiding injuries and having depth to plug guys in to help avoid injuries and to allow the quality of play to continue at a high level is the key. So that is the genesis of preseason. You know, preseason years ago, 30, 40 years ago, were 6 and 8 weeks long, and it started right around July, right after July 4th. And it was because in those days, players had off-season jobs, and they used training camp to get into training. It was kind of like built after the basic training. You go there to get into the type of shape that you're going to need to be in the service. Well, that was done in the NFL for so many years. It's a way to get guys in shape. Well, that's not the case anymore. As you well know, guys are in shape. They make a lot of money. They have private trainers, nutritionists. So they're in shape. They report to camp in shape. Some in better shape than others, but there's no excuse for a player not to be in shape. There's really no off-season job. There's certainly some off-season interest by players and business interests and whatnot, but it's a completely different dynamic, as all of you may know. What you may not be as aware of, or you may have heard it, but you may not see how this affects football, the on-the-field part of it, is the lack of physical contact in the offseason has certainly hindered the development of a football player as it relates to getting ready for the season. When you only have 15 padded practices, it is very difficult, while you can get in good cardiovascular shape, it is very difficult to get in football shape. Football is a game of contact, combative, physical contact. It still, in the essence, is, you know, the ability to block and tackle to a certain degree. The game has become more spread and has become less focused on tackling and blocking, and more will block by scheme, and it is trying to get away from as much physical contact as possible, but you can't eliminate it. And so when you get into preseason and you get into the regular season, of course, there's going to be physical contact. How do you prepare your body for it? Well, that's the dilemma, and that's where preseason comes in, is you've got to work your way into preseason. Young guys, old guys, limitations on certain players, a lot of work for other players. Is getting your body prepared for the football season is more important than ever. So while it may not be exciting to watch, understand that what you're watching overall in preseason is a process in which, if you handle it correctly, you get your body best prepared for the football season and dealing with the blocking, tackling issues that are essential and fundamental in football. Those that do that the best are the ones that have success. The ones that are a little bit more scheme-oriented and have to go through maybe putting in a new system, sometimes they can be behind in terms of the fundamentals. I think mini camps and the early part of training camp are about fundamentals. You don't have good fundamentals. If you don't know how to study, you don't know the basis of what your offense, defense, and special teams are, and you don't build from that, it's not having a good foundation. It's trying to learn advanced math without properly knowing your multiplication, addition, subtraction, long division. It's a simple concept, folks, but it's one in which you have to build upon. And I think that what has been lost is that in lieu of padded practices, preseason has become more practice oriented. And one of the things that I know, being on a couple of NFL committees that we've looked at, and I think would be something that ought to be considered, is maybe to have more scrimmages against other teams, and maybe take away a preseason game. The reason why they don't want to do that, of course, is they like charging you, the fan, a preseason game in your season ticket package, which is really not fair to the fans. But it is important to understand that what happens in preseason and how you prepare your team well or not so well will have a lot to do with the early and late season success of your football team. Now, what are you looking for when you're watching your team in preseason? Don't focus on the yards and the completions and the stats. Those things are useful to a point, but you have to look at individual players and situations. Teams do not game plan for preseason. They don't game plan for an opponent. So they don't go in with a blitz package that they feel is going to be effective against this opponent. Or they don't try to attack an opponent's defense based upon how they think will be successful. What you want to do is make work on your football team. Develop successes with your football team. In some cases, it's building confidence in a certain part of your package. Some cases, it's working on things excessively that you don't do very well. Now, the downside of a preseason game as opposed to a scrimmage is you can agree, you're having a scrimmage against another team, that, look, we're going to work 60% on red zone, or 30% on third down, or 25% on goal line. Or you can pick what you want to work on collectively, and you can get a bunch of snaps and a lot of work done in that aspect. In a preseason game, you have to work within the concept of the game. I mean, how much offense you can work will depend on how many possessions you have. Well, how does your defense play? Where's the field position going to be? Well, you can't work a lot on third downs if you don't have a lot of third down opportunities. You're not going to be able to work in your backed up part of your end if you've got good field position. And if you can't work as much on red zone if you don't have many red zone opportunities. So you have to kind of work with what you get. I use this analogy because I think a lot of people can relate to this a little better. If you're a golfer, if you want to work on your short game, if that's where you're having trouble, then you go out to the short game area of your club and you work on your chipping, you work on your pitching, you work on putting. You can focus and get a lot more reps. If you only do it while you're playing, well, guess what? You still have to hit a tee shot. You still have to hit your approach shot. And, you don't get as many chances to work on the things you want to work on. So very often in football is you want to focus, and this is what practice is all about. We want to focus on a correction period. This is what we want to do individually. Each position will work on certain things. For the backs, it may be a certain blocking technique. For receivers, it may be a certain route that it's being introduced that they need more work on. Maybe there's a problem with drop balls and concentration. You'll have correction period to where you're going to work more time on that. Offensive linemen. There's the short set in pass protection. Well, you may work a little bit more on that. And a lot of different things you can segment. But when you get into a game, you have to work on things as they come, and you can't script them, obviously. So what does it mean for you, the fan watching? Look at the young players. Look on special teams. These are things that I think are easily noticeable if you're watching the game from the stands or you're watching it on TV. Look at who's the first guy down on coverage. Look who's the second guy down on coverage. Look for their progression to the ball. I mean, when they show replay, can you see it? Are they coming off of blocks? Are they working inside? Are they taking the long way out? Are they staying in their lanes, progressing to the ball? Really important. What type of guys have special qualities? Return skills, the ability to go down on coverage and cover kicks, the ability to protect well in the return game. So basically, get more involved in understanding special teams and the guys that are taking part of it. Making a football team, being the next good safety or linebacker or defensive end on your team often starts with being a good special teams player. And then a lot of guys that have gone in the Hall of Fame, Terrell Davis went in recently and obviously was a guy that made it on special teams and became quickly a great running back, a Hall of Fame running back. So that's one thing to look at. Situations. Don't worry so much about the finished product. The finished product's not going to be real smooth. A lot of moving parts with guys going in and out. We need to look at the left tackle in this situation. We need to play him also at right tackle. So you don't have the continuity. You're going to have more an advantage to the defense. Why? Offense is more adjusting and working in unison, whereas defensive linemen, while they work in unison on stunts and twists, they're more individual. So a guy individually can stand out on the defense more than he can on offense because a lot of what an offensive lineman will do is in connection with what the guy next to him is doing. So keep that in mind that you have some issues there on the offensive line that are a little bit more difficult to you can evaluate individually, but remember how they grade out individually is in direct correlation to how guys play around them. In terms of skill position guys, yeah, it's great when you see a guy catch a bunch of balls, run well. Those things are great. You see effort, you see execution. That's fine, but the results are really not what's important. It's the process. Is when you're looking at a running back, look at how explosive he is to and through the hole. Look at how he's able to make people miss onto the second level. Yes, it will be affected by who he's playing against. So it's important to understand the guys on everybody's roster, not just your team, because you get a feel for who they're doing it against. Extremely important in the evaluation process, who they're doing it against. But good play is good play, and you can't dismiss it. So in essence, when you're looking at a Dak Prescott last year in preseason, you see that he's making all sorts of plays. You don't want to get overly excited because preseason is not the regular season. Preseason doesn't mean it's going to translate to the regular season. But if he's doing what he's supposed to do, and he's throwing the football on time accurately, and he's showing great leadership skills, it should not be dismissed just because it's in preseason. Does it always translate into the regular season like it did for Dak last year? No. But again, you have to look at the big picture is, you know, what type of team is the player on? Is it a good, really good offensive line, good running game? You know, those type of things are going to positively or negatively affect the play of the quarterback. So when you're looking at it, don't worry about completion percentages. Where does the quarterback throw the football? What routes are is he throwing? Is the ball coming out on time? You know, you're not looking for a finished product. If a quarterback is a finished product right now, he got a problem. That means he's probably not going to be very good. If he's as good as he's going to be, that's a real problem and one you don't want to have. What you want is a guy that's showing progressive improvement. And you build on stages. So it's fine to get excited about a DeShone Kizer or a Mitch Trubisky based on the first preseason games. But you have to put it in perspective. They're not going up against defenses that are game planning to stop them. They're going up against teams that are doing the same thing that they're trying to do, and that's evaluate players on both sides of the ball. But you should not dismiss it. They always say the alternative to not playing well is not to playing well is not playing well, and you don't want that. So keep that in mind, keep it in perspective. Look at individual and group performances in situations. You know, how are they doing in third downs? Are they getting enough base pass rush? Are they having to blitz a lot? You know, don't dismiss the fact, oh, the second team guys are not important. Well, you got to have eight defensive linemen that can play for you. So if you're not getting good play in the second half from your defensive line, guess what? You're not going to be good enough. And your front guys are not going to be good enough because they're going to have to play more snaps. And more snaps means less productivity the more snaps that they play. It's why a Atlanta Falcons looks really good rushing the passer and getting after New England in the Super Bowl for the first half. But you're on the field for 90-plus snaps, and your defense is wearing out. Why? Not enough depth. Okay. And quite frankly, same thing with the great Alabama defense. Alabama defense faltered down the stretch. Well, why did they falter? They just suddenly didn't play well? No, they didn't suddenly just not play well. They were on the field for 98 snaps a game in that game. Well, they got worn down. So, again, look at the quality of play or the lack thereof from your team in backups in the second half. If you're not good enough, then that's an indication that you're not deep enough if you're not playing well deep into the game. So, and it's situational. Look at the rosters. We're going to get into it here in a future podcast very soon of roster makeups. How many players at each position depending upon that you need to keep, depending upon the scheme that you play. So we're going to get in to that a little bit more. But hope that gives you a little bit of idea of what to look for in preseason to get a feel for your team and the best way to go about the evaluation process.
With that said,
let's take a look at some of the guys in week one that did some good things that you can get excited about. And I like to focus on maybe some young guys. And we'll branch out into talking a little bit about the teams as we go forward. But, you know, in no particular order, if in looking at the and I've got all these breakdowns on LandryFootball.com. For our members, it's a great resource. It's like having a scouting department for less than at your hands, at your disposal, for less than a magazine subscription. We break down every game, and we'll tell you who graded out well, who stood out, what we learned from the game from inside the film room. We do it for you. And then looking at the San Francisco-Kansas City game, a couple of things that jumped out is some young defensive players. Solomon Thomas, the rookie from Stanford, really did a good job, uses his hands well. You see the ability to be able to have an effect, a positive effect on his team, and I think early on he will. Reuben Foster, the linebacker from Alabama, another good performance by him, played well. Kansas City really jumps out at me as the play of Patrick Mahomes. And for those that are members of LandryFootball.com, you know in the draft process we talked about what Patrick Mahomes could do and how being in Kansas City, being specifically under Andy Reid, is going to greatly enhance his development because you're going to see him play a lot in the preseason. They don't need a lot of work from Alex Smith, and Patrick's not going to play much in the regular season unless Alex Smith gets injured. This is going to be a pretty good Kansas City team. But what you see in Mahomes is his ability to extend plays, create and make plays. It's great. That's a positive thing. But what makes him not ready, fans who are excited, oh, let's put him in, he can make big plays. And what he has to do is he has to learn how to play the game like Alex Smith plays it. He needs to learn how to be able to see the field, dump the ball off, protect the football. It is more important from a quarterback standpoint what you do not do than what you do do. So you can't play in this league successfully from the quarterback position if you make a big play one play and then you make a mistake the next play. You'll never make enough big plays to overcome that. So what's important is to be able to be consistent and be able to take chances when they're prudent chances and the opportunity suggests it and be smart with the football at other times. You'll hear me use a lot of golf analogies. Big golfer, love the game. In essence, you're never going to win and be successful as a golfer if you don't make a lot of pars. If you make a few birdies and then you make a few bogeys, you can't ever, you want to be able to be consistent. You want to be able to get the ball in the hole from 100 yards in. You want to be able to make pars and then make birdies when the opportunities are there. But to me, bogey avoidance, mistake avoidance is more important than making explosive plays. It may not fit everybody's little weekend gambling game, I know, making birdies your pick, but that's important point to understand that in football, from the quarterback position, it's about being able to make the smart decisions and know where to go with the football. And again, big plays are going to be there for a young quarterback, particularly in preseason, because they're not seeing NFL coverage then. They're seeing pieces of it, and they're not seeing necessarily the guys that they're going to be seeing on a regular basis. Which, okay, in some cases, you may face some of those backup guys, but not in a lot of cases. So I think, though, there's positive signs if you're looking at a Patrick Mahomes. There are positive signs if you're looking at a Mitchell Trubisky that clearly show the ability to make plays and create outside the pocket. But the key for them is how they can handle the rudimentary things and the smart things. And that is, folks, is often the most difficult thing and the most overlooked thing that people, they tend to think that the great splash play, the play you see on the highlights, are what you're looking for. No, that's not what you're looking for. What you're looking for is the ability to do the routine things well. And if you do those things well, then obviously those extra things just become something that you can become an elite player at. Cincinnati's got a couple of good young defensive ends. Jordan Willis, who I really liked coming out in this past draft. Carl Lawson did a really good job. In Tampa, Vernon Hargraves continues to get better and make plays. I have a feeling that Mike Evans is going to have a Pro Bowl type of year. He is in that elite category. You can put him in that class of a Julio Jones type of player, the elite blue-level player. And you'll hear me reference things. Blue-level players in the league are the top-line players in the league. They make plays that are the difference in close games. They have superior talent and consistently make big plays. The red players are the guys that win for you, starter production. They're impact players for contending teams. The blues are the elites. Mike Evans is a blue and a big-time player. It's only week one, but no question that the most impactful, impressive, instinctive young rookie that can make an impact for a team is in Pittsburgh with T.J. Watt. J.J.'s younger brother, edge rusher, playing in a stand-up and a hands-down position, can be very effective as a rusher. He has the ability to get skinny through a hole, to work pass rush moves. He's got quickness. He's built a lot different than his brother. They're both athletic and quick-twitched, but T.J.'s a little more speedy, edgy, on the outside edgy, I mean, and really effective. Arthur Motes is playing well for the Steelers, too. Really good camp for both of these guys. T.J. Watt just looks like a Steeler. I mean, an ideal fit for what they want to do and a lot of their 30-front looks and spinoffs from that. Dalvin Tomlinson, rookie from Alabama, who I loved. I felt was a very underrated player in Alabama's defense. Doing a really good job for the Giants. Miles Garrett off to a good start with the Browns. Going to be a really, really good player, has the goods. I thought Alex Anzalone from Florida did a good job, the Saints in week one. Jonathan Bullard of the Bears, the defensive tackle, did a good job. So those are some, initial thoughts on some guys. Of course, we've got, again, the complete breakdowns on LandryFootball.com for each and every game that's out there. Want to look quickly at the AFC, and I can't tell you, and folks, that's why we play the game. Okay, nothing is guaranteed, but we've not had a year like this in some time where there is a prohibitive favorite, as much as New England is the prohibitive favorite. First of all, they've got the pedigree. They've been there, we know. They've got the coach. They've got the quarterback. We don't know what this season's going to bring in terms of health. But I can tell you this, that in terms of a roster going into the season, this is the biggest gap between New England and any other team going into the season. So all those Super Bowl teams, to me, they were more in doubt in previous years than they are this year. Now, that doesn't mean that they're a lock to win the Super Bowl. They're not. It's a long season. Injuries, all of a sudden, we're talking maybe in 3 weeks, they come back to the pack because they have a pivotal injury to somebody like Tom Brady. But, you know, they've dealt with injuries to Gronk. They've dealt with limitations at receiver, offensive line limitations, running back limitations, a secondary that's maybe short a corner, and they still go and win the Super Bowl. They don't have that this year. They're loaded for bear in the secondary. They're as deep as they've been. So that allows Bill Belichick to create a lot of different coverage opportunities. They've got, I think, depth in rotation up front to be able to rush the passer. Offensively, we know they've got Brady. We know they're well-coached and developed on the offensive line. They've got a number of backs that can play. And, oh, by the way, they've got right now their best receiver, I think, on their team in terms of playmaker is a guy that wasn't even on the team last year. Brandon Cooks, I think, is going to have a great year for the Patriots. Going to put up big numbers and make big plays for them and is only going to make Edelman better. And if Gronk can stay healthy, big if, it's going to be New England and everyone else. And the storyline in the AFC is going to be, can anybody beat them in the AFC? Miami certainly took a blow. Cutler will fit Gase's scheme, but they weren't a team that was capable of really challenging the Patriots in the division. Not saying they can't beat them in a game, just they can't win the division. And certainly Buffalo and the Jets can't. The question for the Dolphins is, or do they fall by the wayside enough to where they're taken out of the wild card picture? We'll have to see on that. The team that may have the best component, if healthy, if everything in place, is Pittsburgh. And I like them in the North. Big Ben, ton of weapons on offense. With a healthy Le'Veon Bell and a head-on straight Le'Veon Bell, they've got as good a back as there is in football. James Conner, who can spell him. Depth at receiver. Big Ben at quarterback. And we kind of alluded to T.J. Watt. They've got to get more production out of their defense. Do I like them to beat New England? No, but we'll deal with that in January when breaking down those games, as we'll see what these two teams look like roster-wise, health-wise. But Pittsburgh certainly, if all things are equal, has the best chance. And perhaps, too, let's keep in mind that while New England can go on the road and win, they're virtually unbeatable when you have to go through Foxborough to win. So, you know, if they were to struggle during the season and have some injuries and Pittsburgh were to get home field advantage, that would certainly increase the chances. Baltimore, boy, every day is a different injury for them. They looking more and more like a 500-type team at best. Cincinnati's rebuilding, have some pieces, good young pieces. Cincinnati is one of the more underrated teams. I tell people all the time that, and he's not an easy guy to pull away because he's happy there, but if you want somebody running your organization, making personnel decisions, Duke Tobin is about as good as there is. And certainly he works well with coaches, and he's done a good job for Marvin. They've made some decisions and taken some risks on players character-wise. But the reason why you look at the Bengals roster, and it was very common and very accurate, by the way, to call their roster the best in the league for a 2 or 3 year period, that was mainly due to Duke Tobin. And they've had to re-siphon that and re-change that a little bit, losing a number of guys. He's back with his drafts, rebuilding it again. Very good team, but they're just not a team that's, to me, capable of getting even, maybe not even to 500. Cleveland is not there yet. It would be a great season if the Browns won 3 or 4 games this year as opposed to one, but that's about pushing it. The South, to me, is going to be very interesting, and maybe the most interesting in the AFC is I think there's clear prohibitive favorites, as I mentioned, with New England and Pittsburgh. Who's going to win the South? You've got a Tennessee team that's getting better and better. Defense is improving. Run the football well. Good offensive line. Mariota stays healthy. They've got a lot of the pieces to potentially begin to put it together. Houston would be the other team. Very good defense. As good a defense as it was in football last year, without J.J. Watt, what can Deshaun Jackson do at quarterback? Will Tom Savage carry this offense most of the year? Those are the questions that I think are going to be interesting to see and won't be developed, and we won't know that through, you know, week four, week six. It's something we're going to know more like week 12 where this team is going or headed. So look for Houston and Tennessee. Indianapolis, the roster is not good enough around Andrew Luck. The health of Andrew Luck is still concerning. I don't know how good of a year he can have coming off the injury and really not even throwing the football much right now. Jacksonville's an improving team, but the quarterback position could hold them back. That division's going to be very interesting to watch, the most interesting in the AFC. The West would be the second most interesting. I think Oakland and Kansas City are the superior teams. I think there could be an 11-win team win the division and maybe a, maybe 12, but, you know, I think maybe 11 and certainly 10. I expect both Kansas City and Oakland to win 10 games or 11 games, if not 12. Oakland certainly has. Reggie McKenzie's done a really good job with the roster. They're getting better. Really good young pair of safeties that will only help get this defense a little better. Need to get more pass rush around Khalil Mack and help them defensively if they're going to challenge the Patriots. People think that if Derek Carr would have been healthy, they would have maybe beaten the Patriots. They wouldn't have beaten the Patriots last year in the AFC playoffs, but they might have had the best chance, just wouldn't have been good enough to do it. Offensively, we'll see what Marshawn Lynch can do in short yardage and goal line for him. They've got weapons. They've got a quarterback. The Raiders' future is very bright. Right now in Oakland, going to Vegas, certainly, if not the favorite, co-favorites with Kansas City. Kansas City's another good defensive team. Bob Sutton does a good job. They have a good vision for the type of players that they want. They're very solid on all three levels. Offensively, it's, again, about being able to get enough plays made in the passing game, downfield, stretching defenses. I think Kansas City's a team that can challenge for the playoffs, but I don't see them as a team that could advance in the playoffs, because I don't think they have enough playmakers. So I think the Raiders are the bigger threat into the playoffs if they get there. The team that I'm really not high on, that a lot of people are, that tend to be put in amongst the upper echelon in the AFC, is the Denver Broncos. Don't like this offense. Don't like their quarterback situation. They're not comfortable with Paxton Lynch. It's why Trevor Siemian has the job. They've revamped the offensive line. I don't know how much better they're going to be running the football, but if they're not appreciably better, this offense will be really poor. And no, for the Bronco fans, this defense is not going to carry it. This defense didn't carry it last year because the offense wasn't good enough to make that defense be in a position to carry it. 2 years ago when they won the Super Bowl, they won the Super Bowl with great defense, but with an offense that allowed that defense to be able to go and win games for them. That offense was able to get in and out of bad plays and into good plays, run the football effectively enough, and had a veteran quarterback that got the ball to the hands of playmakers, kept the chains moving, and then allowed that defense to go and hunt and win football games. This defense is no defense without a complementary offense is going to be able to do anything. And this Bronco offense, to me, does not look like it's going to be consistent enough to make enough plays to allow this defense to be good enough to be a real factor. Now, when I say a real factor, I mean, I think they can be a 500 team. And, you know, listen, all it takes is a couple of bad things to happen to your division teams, and all of a sudden you got an extra couple of wins there, and you might end up winning 10 games. But this is not a team that's capable of doing a whole lot this year. The defense is good. The secondary is outstanding. But they've got some holes on this defense. They didn't defend the run very well. They're a little short up front. They're not as dominant. So even if the offense were to get in surprise, I don't think this defense is good enough to be able to win it like they did 2 years ago. Jack Del Rio and John Fox were the key guys in drafting and signing defensive players that really led to that Broncos Super Bowl 2 years ago. And they weren't there, and certainly they didn't get it done in winning a Super Bowl when they were coaches there, but they were the ones responsible for it. John Elway gets the credit for it, but really it was the coaches that were so involved in making those decisions and John just signing off on it, Elway signing off on it. But that's why the Broncos drafts and free agency, if you've noticed, hadn't been nearly as good. Why? Because those coaches are out the door and they're not there, and the current coaches are not as good at identifying and evaluating players. So the Broncos roster is slipped a little, not a lot. Chargers already off to a bad start injury-wise. The two outstanding rookie guards that were plug-and-play guys that, to me, I thought could really help spark-plug this offense, they're already suffering injuries and may not get much out of one of them is done, and they may not get much out of the other. So, problem there. Don't think that that the Chargers are going to be a big factor, but with Phillip Rivers, they can stay a little healthy and can get something out of the offensive line. I think they can be a team that could win maybe seven games. So the thing about the West is everybody looks like a 7 or 8 win team or better. And I think that is important to understand, and that's how they look in terms of a roster. May not stay that way all year long, and obviously not everybody's going to have the same amount of wins, but that's important to understand. That division is going to be real competitive. So the South and the West, competitive. The North and the East may not be so much. So we'll see how the big boys do and how that plays out in the AFC. We'll take, again, a look at the NFC on Thursday. Want to get into Zeke Elliott, Colin Kaepernick. First of all, Zeke Elliott, it's the newest, most recent issue. And it's one of the things, and it's, I don't want to say it's comical, because it's certainly the issue is not comical, but it's very predictable. Is, you know, fan bases, they align on how it affects their football team. And so when a penalty like this is about to be rendered, you can pretty much say that it's going to be either too harsh or too lenient, depending on which viewpoint you take in terms of how you view that team, that situation. We tend to put morality aside when it affects our football team, unfortunately. The league is very aggressive with how they look at any off-the-field situations, domestic situations. And when people ask me what type of penalty will he get, and my answer was, I don't know. It was an honest one because I don't know what happened in the situation. I know what's been reported. What's been reported is not always accurate. Very often it's inaccurate, because it comes from somebody that's got an agenda and the other side. I mean, Jerry Jones said nothing happened. Well, obviously something happened. He's not getting suspended for nothing. I think it's a lot of, you know, Jerry putting his clout and bravado behind it, trying to say something to maybe reduce and set the stage for an appeal that might reduce it, the penalty. And we'll see if it goes down from 6 games or not. And that depends upon the appeal, exactly what took place, when it took place, how it took place. Folks, you don't need an arrest. You don't need a conviction to get suspended. The league says you're doing things that are inappropriate. You're going to get penalized for that. You're going to get punished for that. The decisions that Zeke has made has been very inconsistent, very problematic, and you know, it's a combination of maybe certain things didn't happen here, but then you have an arrest in a bar. And, you know, it's a lot of these things tend to add up. And as they investigate every situation, none of them may lead to anything that is a conviction, an arrest, or anything, but it's maybe a pattern that concerns them. In essence, if one of these things had happened and not any of the others, the penalty would not be as severe. How the appeal will take place, how long will it take? That's probably the biggest issue I have with the NFL, is that how long it takes to get some of this information and render a decision. I think it could be expedited a lot better. I think that in fairness to all involved, they need to render a decision a lot sooner than they have. We'll see, but it's pretty clear, and I think it's important to understand that while an arrest can hurt a player because it suggests that legal authorities have a reason to arrest someone. Although we know sometimes arrests have been false in the past, so you can't put everything on it. But It's certainly never a good thing if you get arrested or questioned, certainly arrested. But just because you don't does not mean you haven't done anything wrong in the eyes of the league and how they want players to conduct themselves. So keep that in mind. Want to address briefly Colin Kaepernick from a different perspective. Okay, you know, that's been the topic all offseason. I get it. Got to have something to talk about. But the reality is this. In talking with football people and being involved in consulting work for teams, it's important to understand that you have to separate the off the field with the on the field, and then you bring it all together. Because you can't a player's football skills should not be diminished or enhanced by his character. His character should enhance the person, and it should enhance the ability to develop those football skills, but you have to separate them before you bring them together. Regardless what you think about him as a person and some of his decisions that he's made, and that is something we're going to get into in a second, on the field, while he has been successful under a certain scheme in San Francisco with Jim Harbaugh, good defense, good running game, and big-time playmaking ability with his feet. Getting to a Super Bowl and being one of the better teams in the league, Seattle, is an indication and certainly a credit to Colin. But it's a credit to a lot of people and a lot of people in that organization and that team, mainly Jim Harbaugh, and the talent that they put around them and how they utilize him. Why don't other people do the same thing? Well, there's a limitation to what Colin can do as a quarterback in the pocket as a passer. Yes, he had good numbers last year. But remember, the consistency of making plays within the pocket as a passer is really what people are looking for in the NFL. Why? It's the best way to stress the defense. The run element is great. If it's an accoutrement to the main meal. If it's the main thing that you do, it won't be successful at the highest level. Well, you can help you win a game, just not going to win championships unless you're so good around them that it camouflages that. The ability to attack defenses from the pocket, it forces the defense to cover the entire field vertically and horizontally. And so the guys that can throw the football and make plays from outside, out the pocket, in the pocket, are pivotal. But making plays in the pocket is the best way to cripple a defense. That's not what Colin does all that well. So there's not a lot of teams that view him as highly as the fans view him or the media views him. People that want to see Colin play in the league again because they're a fan of what he did and his social activity, well, that's different. We're talking football. Football people are concerned about putting the best football team together. And while you look and you may say, well, he's better than this backup guy who I never heard of, you never heard of him. But remember that as a backup quarterback in the league, Colin is in a very big disadvantage because teams are not in a position. It's tough enough to build and develop one offense in the NFL. You're not going to be able to develop two. So you're going to have to change your offense for a backup quarterback, and you can't do that. That makes no sense, and it's completely misunderstood by the fans and the media who really don't know football. You can't just have an offense that you run in certain blocking schemes and route concepts, and then your quarterback injured, your backup quarterback is Colin Kaepernick, and he's got to run and freelance and do something different. You don't have time to develop two. So you have to have a quarterback who can run the same offense as your starter. So that eliminates most teams in the league from a football standpoint for Colin Kaepernick. I think that Seattle's offense, I think Carolina's offense were two offenses where I think he would have been a really good fit as a backup quarterback. It's pretty clear to me that the reason they don't want him has to do with off the field distractions. Do they want to deal with a quarterback that you're going to have a lot of media distractions about what he's going to do, what he did do, what he's going to do in the future. And people don't want that type of distraction for a backup quarterback. It's the same reason why people didn't want to fool with Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow's case, Tim Tebow was not as good a quarterback as Colin Kaepernick. But he still fit the distraction mode that now Colin Kaepernick occupies. So it's not a good fit for the locker room in most cases. Now, let's get to the issue of the political and social element that certain owners are turned off by. And some owners that, quite frankly, there's some that don't care, that just want to win. But they are getting affected, and quite frankly, are getting more affected than I ever thought by hearing it from their sponsors that say, we don't want this guy. As a fan, as a sponsor, we don't want this guy representing our city and our team. And I think it's having an effect. I think it's having an effect. Certainly had an effect in Baltimore, who I think would have been willing with John Harbaugh, the brother of Jim, to bring in Colin Kaepernick as a football staff. Ozzie Newsome, John Harbaugh would have been willing to bring him in absence of Joe Flacco. And the owner, I can tell you, Steve Bisciotti, was on board with bringing him in until he started to hear from some of his sponsors. And then from an owner's standpoint, he's got to decide, we're going to bring this guy in as a backup until Joe Flacco gets back, and we're going to upset the apple cart of our fan base and, more importantly, our sponsors that are putting a lot of money, and we're going to alienate them for a short term and for a guy that not everybody's convinced is all that as a football player. That's where the problem is. So for people who say, and you hear them say, it's all political and it's nothing about football, those people don't know what they're talking about, okay? Because there is a football element to this that doesn't fit for a lot of teams, as I've explained. The people that say it has nothing to do with the political stuff and it's all football, that's not correct either. Because as I've said, I think there are a couple of places where he would have been a good fit. But politically or socially or from a management standpoint, sponsorship, not a good fit. So keep that in mind. It's never as simple. It's not usually as black and white as people think. It's a lot of gray area, but I hope that gives an idea. Talked a lot of NFL, rightly so. The NFL preseason's here. More news associated with it. Wanted to get to a lot of that. But boy, do I love college football. Anybody that follows LandryFootball.com and knows me knows that my work is intertwined with the college and NFL game. And really excited about this college football season and what a great season it's going to be. But I want to pick up where we left off last year, the national playoffs, national championship game, Clemson, great win. Nick Saban, Alabama losing down the stretch. Let's go back to the national playoff game, national semifinal game. Alabama plays Washington. You know, one of the things, We'll take it a step further or step back a little further. Through the season and through the SEC championship game, you know, the reason why the Lane Kiffin offense coordinator at Alabama situation worked with Nick Saban is because Nick Saban had the control to be able to rein Lane Kiffin in when things got a little bit out of whack. Once we got to the national playoffs, and Lane Kiffin, who's very immature, very disorganized, and very self-centered, got the job at Florida Atlantic and no longer felt the need to answer to Nick Saban. Basically, I'm going to kind of do this the way I want. And it got very concerning to Nick in terms of the production and play in the game against Washington. Now, no one really said anything because they won the game and it wasn't as close as people thought, or it wasn't close, period, and it wasn't a threat to Alabama losing it. But in studying the game, it was pretty clear that a lot of things had changed. It not drastically, but subtle, that has a drastic effect. The blocking scheme started to adjust a little bit. They became a little bit more finesse, and they got a little bit away from the running game and took chances in essence, Lane Kiffin trying to show off a little bit. Look at me. I'm going to Florida Atlantic. I'm the offensive mastermind here, and look what we're going to do. Well, what makes Alabama great is their defense, their running game on offense, very good on special teams. And one of the things that Nick Saban has tried to do with different coordinators, in this case Lane Kiffin, is to expand his offense, to become more varied, more versatile, the ability to be able to stretch people out and maybe augment that running game and make them more effective when they do run it. And he did it very effectively as long as he had kind of control over Lane Kiffin. But one thing that I thought Alabama got away from in the national playoffs is they didn't run the power series as well. Not just running the football, but how they blocked up front wasn't nearly as effective. And they got away from that physical style that they need to. When they get a lead, they hammer people away. You know, Alabama's style is not to, you know, score 55 points in three quarters and blow you away. They score 10 points to 14 points a quarter, and by the end of the game, you're bloodied, you're beaten, you're bruised, you're battered, and the score's, you know, 48 to 10, and you've been hammered far greater than anybody, you know, that beats you 77 to 17. It's just, it's a physical domination that very few can put up on an opponent. Alabama does it consistently. Doing it in the national playoffs is a little different, particularly when you're playing a Deshaun Watson. So you get up in the national championship game against Clemson. You play well. You find some answers against their defense. But offensively, you're not running the football and can't run the football well. You have a chance in that fourth quarter to put the game away, but you can't do it offensively. You're not as physical. You've gotten out of your element that makes you successful. And then now you can't convert on third downs. You can't pick up first downs and salt the game away. And you give a great quarterback in Deshaun Watson a couple of extra possessions. And boom, you're great defense. What you think is going to stop Deshaun Watson, all of a sudden, that's not the great defense at the end of the game when you're on the field for 95 snaps. You're a defense that's dead legged and they can't perform as their usual self. All those things factored in. Clemson beat them and beat them well, and part of it was, again, Alabama getting away a little bit of what they wanted to do, and I think that's why Nick made the change away from Lane to Sark, but I still thought they had problems in some of their blocking schemes. And so a lot of that discussion took place in the offseason, and I know Nick addressed it. He addressed it with Brian Daboll. And by the way, he encouraged Steve Sarkisian. He had decided that while Steve Sarkisian could add some qualities to Alabama's offense, I think he felt a couple of things. Sark, with his background and his ongoing battle with alcohol, and he's doing very well, but I'll put this as kindly as I can. The stress level can certainly lead guys who have those type of problems to resurface. And certainly working for Nick Saban is very stressful. I think the fit became a little bit of a concern, although Sark does not have Lane Kiffin's personality and is much more respectful and how he goes about dealing with things. I don't think he saw it as an ideal fit. And I think as he studied more and more about where he wanted to go, back to his physical style, and listen, they're going to still want to run the RPOs and do all the things to spread people out, but not get away from their power series nearly as much. I think he felt like that the best opportunity for Sark would be to maybe go on. And when the opportunity came about in Atlanta, he encouraged him to go to the Falcons. And then Brian Daboll is the guy that's come in. And listen, we'll see how well Brian does. He's got a Herculean job. He's got to be able to keep that offense moving in terms of the passing game. Jalen Hurts, two of the young freshman quarterback, they're going to have to be able to throw the football, throw it effectively to augment their running game. But I think getting away from that power series is something that concerned Nick and is something that he has recommitted himself to doing, and it's what he won national championships with. And he understands without question that the key to getting back and winning it and finishing it is two things. To stay being Alabama like Alabama is, but also becoming more dynamic when you need to be, because in the national playoffs, you're going to have to beat somebody potentially that's really good. Maybe it's an Ohio State, a Florida State type of team, which they play in the opening game. You might have to score some points. You might have to open up the offense a little bit, but you've got to be able to score points, but you've got to be able to wear a defense out and doing it, and you've got to be able to finish games. And you finish games and win games with a great defense and a good running game. So that's been the mantra, the quiet mantra. There's not a lot of talk. You never hear any conversations coming out of Tuscaloosa. But my time there, I can tell you that's been the focus of Alabama this offseason, is to do that. Very interested to see how this plays off. Alabama, clearly, I think, the team to beat. I think if I'm looking at national playoff contenders, I'm looking at Alabama. I'm looking at Ohio State as national playoff caliber teams. I do think the loser of Alabama, Florida State, can still be in the national picture, depending on how close that game is, and obviously depending upon how the loser finishes the season. I think Florida State is the team to beat in the ACC. But I do think there's a separation after Alabama and Ohio State. It's a little bit of a separation with Florida State. And then I think that there's a cluster of teams, any number of teams that are capable of being good. USC, certainly, I worry about their depth, but they're a good team. Washington's very good. Stanford's very good, all in the Pac-12. I think Oklahoma is a good team. We'll see, obviously, with Lincoln Riley, how that progresses in the Big 12. Oklahoma State's a very good team. They're a chic pick to make the national playoffs. Could they get in there? It's possible, because winning in the Big 12 is winning with offense. Oklahoma State has a very good offense. Their defense is not national championship caliber, but they could get into the playoffs potentially as an unbeaten Big 12 team if that happens. Big 10, Ohio State the team to beat. Penn State, very good. Finish the season with a lot of momentum, bring a lot of guys back, including quarterback Trace McSorley and the outstanding running back Saquon Barkley. Then you got a Michigan team that's, I think, getting better, good. Wisconsin plays in the weaker West, so we'll see how that plays out. There is a big gap, I think. Yes, a big gap, I think, between Alabama and the rest of the SEC. You know, Auburn with Jarrett Stidham, we see Auburn be a roller coaster team. We'll see how that plays out this year, whether they can stay in contention. LSU is a good team, not a great team. I think there's a separation between Alabama and the rest of the West. In the East, I think the team with the best future might be Georgia. I think Florida is going to be very good again. How much better can Georgia be? Tennessee, a lot of pressure under Butch Jones. How successful they'll be this year, going to be pivotal. But I think there's definitely a gap between it continues to be a gap between Alabama and the rest of the teams in the SEC. So it's going to be a fun year. Some teams, there's some sleeper teams, I think, that can be really good. TCU will be good. I think Virginia Tech will be good. I think North Carolina State will be good. And we'll get into more and more about some sleeper teams and who looks good. But that gives you an idea of kind of where I see teams are being in terms of national caliber. I think Clemson will certainly be there in the ACC with Florida State all year long. I think Miami will be very good and maybe surprise a lot of people. They're starting to look a little better on the offensive and defensive lines at Miami. That's going to be pivotal. So it's going to be a fun season, going to be a great kickoff to the season. Can't remember when we've had as many exciting games to start the season, led off by Alabama, Florida State. We're going to give you an update on Thursday. Florida's suspending a lot of players for the Michigan game to start off the season in Arlington. That's on September 2nd. So that's going to be, you know, a tough matchup for them to go in with a lot of guys, including their outstanding receivers. So we'll give an update on where that is taking place. I want to remind you again what we got for you at LandryFootball.com. What is LandryFootball.com? We know you're listening to this podcast here on Landry. We hope you're watching it, listening to it on LandryFootball.com, but you certainly can listen to it on RadioInfluence.com. But if you have not had a chance, check out LandryFootball.com. Who are we? What are we? We're basically a scouting service. I'm a longtime NFL scout in the league, worked as a college coach, an NFL coach, front office executive. So we bring a scouting and coaching perspective to you, not only through this podcast, but for our members at LandryFootball.com. And we have a lot of free information on LandryFootball.com to give you a lot of news and notes. But what we do for our members is we provide a lot of inside content of what's going on around the college and pro game. But we take you inside the film room, and we break down the teams, the players, teams, coaches, schemes, and we really break down the college and pro game that's very unique than where you're going to get from your ESPNs or the Yahoos or the other places that just have writers. We obviously have a team of NFL scouts, and we provide a scouting and coaching service to you, the fan. You're like the owner, and you get access to a NFL personnel department, scouting department, for less than a magazine subscription. That's how we provide it for you. Folks, we break down the college game. We break down the pro game. We break down recruiting. We break down the draft. We break down free agency 24/7, 365 days a year. LandryFootball.com is a way for you to get on top of the game, learn more about the game. We'll explain the X's and O's. We're here for you if you got any questions. If you're a member, we'll address it here on the show, on the podcast here. We'll address it on the website to help you learn more about the cover two defense or zone blitzes. We're going to explain that for you, the X's and O's, and explain how it applies in the college and pro game on a regular basis. So we're here for you to provide that for you. The draft information all year round. Basically, if you want to learn more about the game, if you want to become a better fantasy football owner, we're going to provide a lot of information to help you there. That's what we're here for you. Go to the website. Check it out. We've got a discount right on the website. So go to it. Check it out. Sign up. You can try us out for a month. You got an option there. You can get it for a year at a huge discount. We'll take you through the entire season, the entire off season. There is no non-football season for us. It's the football season. It's the business season. It's the football season, which we're now entering to. We got it for you. So we appreciate you joining us. Join us again Thursday for the next edition of the LandryFootball.com podcast. Sign up for free to get this. Again, you can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, RadioInfluence.com, and, of course, right here at LandryFootball.com. Talk to you next time, everybody.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. Radio Influence brings you the absolute best in digital audio broadcasting. We've got something for everyone. Sports personalities like the fabulous Sports Babe, Rich Herrera, and former Major League Baseball manager Kevin Kennedy as they take you inside the dugout. We'll take you inside the world of MMA with the MMA Report with Jason Floyd, the MMA Insiders, and the Valor Hour with Tim Loy and Casey Oxidine. Or you could find yourself sitting ringside with wrestling ring announcer David Penzer. TV law enforcement analyst and former police officer Vincent Hill breaks down this week's biggest crime stories and takes you beyond the badge. Chef Brian Duffy from TV's Bar Rescue shares his crazy life on the road with Duffified Live. And Scott Ledger will always make you think with some dangerous conversation. All of Radio Influence's shows can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.